When a vaccine becomes available, take it.
Advice on which COVID vaccine to take. It's Friday, February 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, more drug companies chip in vaccine for worldwide distribution. The U.S. to review supply chains. China could be the main target. Biden takes a closer look at immigrant children not reunited with their parents. And a Pakistan city is overcrowded, so another city is planned to be built. That and more on today's VOA Asia. A third vaccine is likely to soon join the COVID-19 fight, but the nation's top infectious disease expert is urging Americans not to be picky. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Makani reports.
Dr. Anthony Fauci knows people look at vaccine studies and compare effectiveness, 72% versus 95% and so on. They may then decide, I'll just wait for the next, more effective one.
That, I think, is not a good idea.
Fauci on NBC News' Today Show saying people should be confident in any vaccine the FDA approves for emergency use.
When a vaccine becomes available, take it.
Johnson & Johnson's vaccine will take its turn before the FDA's independent advisor tomorrow, and Fauci's looking forward to it joining the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines already in use.
To have two is fine. To have three is absolutely better.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The COVAX facility for coronavirus vaccines will soon get access to 170 million doses of AstraZeneca's vaccine. That according to the UN Children's Fund. The COVAX facility aims to ensure at least 2 billion vaccine doses are available to 85 of the world's poorest countries. UNICEF said that Thursday and said that deliveries of the vaccine will begin in the first quarter of 2021. Two other vaccine makers, Pfizer and the Serum Institute of India, are also providing their vaccines to COVAX for distribution. In other COVID-19 news, a new study finds the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is as effective in real-world use as it was during its late-stage clinical trials. This is VOA Asia. President Joe Biden signed an executive order Wednesday for a government review of global supply chains and potential U.S. vulnerabilities in key industries, including computer chips, electric vehicle batteries, pharmaceuticals, and critical minerals used in electronics. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has this report.
Before ramping up production following the early months of the pandemic, the U.S. had a national shortage of personal protective equipment such as masks and gloves. Now, American automakers struggle to find semiconductor chips to keep assembly lines moving. These are among the issues President Joe Biden wants to address through an executive order for a 100-day government review of global supply chains and potential U.S. vulnerabilities in key industries, including electric vehicle batteries, semiconductors, critical minerals used in electronics, and pharmaceuticals.
These reviews will identify policy recommendations to 40 of our supply chain, to fortify our supply chains at every step, and critically to start implementing those recommendations right away.
Biden's order will also direct year-long reviews in the defense sector, public health, transportation, energy, information technology, and food production. The review can help U.S. companies invest strategically and become more agile during a crisis, said Scott Miller, a senior advisor on the global economy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The key is, with particularly with dramatic change or rapid change, you've got to do a good job of forecasting and you've got to think holistically. You've got to look at the entire sort of life cycle of the operation.
While the executive order does not mention any country, the U.S. is particularly dependent on China in many critical industries and for rare earth minerals needed to make everything from consumer electronics to military equipment. Neda Sanders is a professor of supply chain management at Northeastern University.
That is not a good spot to be in. Having said that, I think to just say we're just focused on China is really short-sighted. And I think that this policy really looks at a really broad picture in terms of U.S. production, manufacture, economy. So it's not just China.
The Trump administration also pushed to shore up supply chains, mostly through tax cuts, to encourage American firms to manufacture domestically and import tariffs. Biden's strategy is different, says Samira Fazil, deputy director of the White House National Economic Council.
This work is not going to be about America going it alone. The answer to these weaknesses is not always to be to ramp up domestic production.
These little chips here for automobiles.
On Wednesday, Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris also met with lawmakers at the White House in order to garner bipartisan support to ensure supply chain resiliency. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. A report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council warns of future violations and instability in Sri Lanka because of that government's repeated failure to redress past violations and bring justice to the victims. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Thousands of Tamils allegedly were killed and women sexually assaulted and raped by Sri Lanka's security forces in the last 6 months of the country's 26-year-long civil war. A report issued by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights at the end of January documents violations including extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary detention, torture, and sexual violence. It noted some of these violations, which could amount to war crimes or crimes against humanity, were committed by both the Sri Lankan military and the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, or LTTE. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet submitted a critical assessment of the current situation in Sri Lanka to the Council. She said nothing has been done to ensure justice for the victims nearly 12 years after the armed conflict. She said the current government, like its predecessor, has failed to promote reconciliation or hold any of the perpetrators to account.
The impact on thousands of survivors from all communities is devastating. Moreover, the systems, structures, policies, and personnel that gave rise to such grave violations in the past remain and have recently been reinforced. Addressing grievances and redressing past violations are critical prevention tools at the core of the Council's work.
High Commissioner Bachelet said disturbing trends over the past year indicate a serious deterioration in civil and political rights. She cited the rapid shrinking of Sri Lanka's independent media and the erosion of judicial independence. She warned the growing militarization of key civilian functions was encroaching on democratic governance.
The continued failure to implement comprehensive reforms or to vet personnel leaves in place security and military officers who have been implicated in alleged grave crimes and violations. Long-standing structural and systemic issues persist in Sri Lanka, and now there are clear warning signs that past patterns of violations could be repeated.
Bachelet says the government has largely closed the door on ending impunity through a national process. Therefore, she urged the Council to explore new ways to advance accountability and seek redress for victims at the international level. Sri Lanka's Foreign Minister Dinesh Gunawardena rejected the High Commissioner's report.
The contents of the report are rife and factual inaccuracies that appear to equate atrocities committed by the LTTE, a terrorist organization proscribed internationally, with a legitimate action taken by the government to safeguard the territorial integrity of the country and the right to life of our people.
The minister called on members of the council to reject any resolution based on this report. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We continue on VOA Asia. President Joe Biden Wednesday revoked a proclamation from his predecessor that blocked many green card applicants from entering the United States. Former President Donald Trump issued the ban last year, saying it was needed to protect U.S. workers amid high unemployment due to the coronavirus pandemic. Biden rejected that reasoning in a proclamation on Wednesday rescinding the visa ban. The Democratic president said it had prevented families from reuniting in the United States and had harmed U.S. businesses. Biden, a Democrat, has pledged to reverse many of Trump's hardline immigration policies. Immigrant advocates had pressed in recent weeks for him to lift the visa ban, which was set to expire March 31st. Biden did leave in place another ban on most foreign temporary workers. The Biden administration is working to speed up the release of immigrant children from holding facilities and send them to relatives or sponsors. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The Department of Health and Human Services has authorized operators of long-term facilities to pay for flights and transportation for some children to get them to the homes of their sponsors. Under current guidelines, the sponsors have to foot the bill, which can be over $1,000 a child. Now, government money can be spent if the family can't afford it, according to a memo obtained by the Associated Press. The government's reduced capacity at holding facilities because of COVID, but Border Patrol picks up about 200 youngsters a day. The National Center for Youth Law applauds the idea of paying for transportation, but calls on the Biden administration to find more ways to release children even faster. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Residents at an assisted living facility in the U.S. are getting a taste of life before the coronavirus pandemic. Thanks to a hug tent, residents can, while wearing plastic sleeves, embrace and hold hands with their family members. More from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
87-year-old Jeannie Sheldon suffers from Alzheimer's, a form of dementia. A resident of Juniper Village in Denver, Colorado, she now gets to hug her son, something she hasn't done in months.
It's been a long time since.
Her son, Tom, says he hasn't seen her in person since last October.
She feels the pain of separation, of not being around family. She was very family-oriented all her life, and so it's just tough to watch that.
Tom says he's grateful for the people who set up the tent at the assisted living facility, even if contact is made through super thick plastic sheeting.
That was wonderful to be able to put my arms around her and feel her, and for her to put her arms around me. Even though she has memory issues, they still live in the moment. And they can enjoy every single moment.
With over 28 million confirmed coronavirus cases, the U.S. has been one of the most affected countries in the world. For the elderly in particular, little hugs can make a world of difference. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
We continue on VOA Asia. Highly crowded Lahore City in Pakistan has the same crowding issues of many urban environments. To help ease the problem, the government plans to build a new city just to the north, but that has some residents worried. VOA's Saman Khan has more in this report narrated by Vaizan Hamdar.
There are hundreds of small agricultural villages on the banks of Ravi River north of Lahore City in Pakistan, where livestock and farming are the main sources of income. But that could change because the government is preparing to build a new city alongside the banks of the river just an hour east of Lahore, which has caused some concern among local villagers.
Some officials came here and took measurements of our houses and said that government will throw you out from here. Then where will we go? Almost all of Lahore vegetables come from here.
The project is being run by the Ravi Urban Development Authority. Pakistan government plans on building a new city on roughly 102,000 acres of land along the Ravi riverfront in three phases over 30 years. The project's chairman says the project is necessary to ease Lahore City's alarming growth and use of resources.
We are building a river line. When you create a planned city, the growth of Lahore City will stop. New housing developments, new societies here will help the rapid growth of Lahore City.
However, environmentalists disagree. Hamad Naqi, head of environmental organization World Wildlife Fund for Nature in Pakistan, says it is not wise to build a new city near a densely populated city like Lahore.
They're saying that if this project happens in Lahore, we'll have sewage treatment, and if this project is there, then there will be an urban forest. There is already Shadara urban forest there. They should bring that up to standards first and then see where and how much real estate development is possible.
According to the government, the project will also help reduce the risk of floods in the area. But experts say it's still not clear what kind of challenges and obstacles the long-term project may bring. The project is still in its planning phase, but some environmentalists are already opposed to building of a new city and are trying to stop the development on environmental grounds. A decision on the project's future lies in Lahore High Court. For Salman Khan in Lahore, Pakistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibel, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please take care of yourself and others, and enjoy the day ahead.